Always good to see the big man just walk in, the shoulders back, chest out, and a big smile on his dial. He's done it again this afternoon. Hello, Kozo.
Yes, hello, half all pumped up, ready to go. Wednesday, we're halfway there, nearly into another weekend. Easter's not far away. Rock footy's going to arrive.
Footy.
Festival of Motorsport, the GP, which was great.
So, were you there on the weekend?
Yes, was there for all 4 days, actually.
All
with
four?
My GP TV responsibilities. Yeah, I was. So great to see them. I mean, it is just such a circus. And how good was the Arnold Schwarzenegger interview?
What the hell happened there?
At the end.
Now, this is a very good point. I'd forgotten about it. I think I blocked it out of my memory. What the hell happened? How did Arnie get a hold of that microphone post-race to interview people he'd never met or knew anything about?
Well, the big part of it was Hollywood comes to town. So Charlize Theron was there, obviously, promoting a new apartment-type building. Arnie was in town because he was with his muscle-flexing mates doing that
Arnie Classic
as well. And, you know, obviously they might have had a choice of handing the microphone to Charlize, who I think didn't play ball all that well, but I'm not sure exactly how all that unfolded. But but Arnie obviously did play ball very, very well, and then got out on the middle of the podium, because that's the current thing now, is that for the last couple of years they've been interviewing the drivers straight afterwards, you know, up on the podium.
Yeah, I think that's good.
I
think that's good.
And I think Damon Hill does it a bit in England, and you know, all that sort of stuff as well, which is great. So Arnie's got the microphone.
Damon Hill's won a Formula One World Championship, though. Has Arnie ever driven a car?
No, not a lot. Not sure that Arnie. Arnie does a bit of motorcycle work, I think, if you remember Rala Terminator and a few other things like that. So,
and bicycle work. Very, his photo in the city the other day.
How funny was that? How funny was that tram?
Yeah, somebody's using those bikes.
On Little Mel. He must be the one. What a waste. So he's there, and obviously someone had said to him, okay, so Lewis Hamilton won. So he charges out, top step of the podium, sidestepping the mum champagne, and off he goes. Oh, Lewis, well done on your win, he's saying, you know. And so Lewis Hamilton, to his, I think Lewis Hamilton was actually more starstruck, actually, because he turns around and goes, hey, it's Arnie. It was like no one had told Lewis, I don't think. I don't know who he was expecting.
But anyone told Arnie before that moment?
Well, I don't know, because then Arnie went from Lewis, well done, congratulations, to turning to Nico Rosberg, and you, what does it feel like to come second, he says. And I thought, you don't know who Nico is, but it put so much glamour into it. It put so much fun into it. It would have been a YouTube sensation. And look, Arnie's fantastic at the best of times. He's really good. And obviously, I think when you've done as much as Arnie, you've been a governor, you've been Mr. Olympia, you've been, you know, movie star.
You're
done
Terminator.
All, you don't care.
Sake.
You get out there, you talk to Lewis, and then you talk to, and you!
And you!
On the second step. And I think by the time he got to Sebastian Vettel, it was like, oh, mate, you're bringing in bronze here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time.
No press, why bother?
But it was great. No, it was very good. And Arnie, and look, it's nice to have that sort of thing. And when you're talking about that, that's not your B grade celebrity. That's your A grade.
No, that's
right.
Arnie's A grade. That's
absolute A grade. So well done to the Grand Prix Corporation in getting Arnie on board.
So you're talking about this happens around the world where they interview people on the podium straight after. Do they normally go for the celebrity type interviewer?
No,
hang around post match.
No. Normally, it is someone involved in the broadcast of the coverage. So
they can get a bit of insight into perhaps what's going on, as opposed to and you.
How did it feel to come second to this man whose name I know and yours I'm not sure about?
But I've forgotten.
Normally it's someone from the motorsport angle.
Right.
But I actually like the rolling of the dice of handing it to someone who may or may not have a level of understanding, or maybe not, of what he's just witnessed over the last couple of hours, and then rolling the dice and saying, there you go, Arnie, the world is yours. Global TV, live all the way around the planet.
I'm all for living on the edge.
I like it.
I was surprised to see Arnie up there, though. I've got to be honest. I did talk the other day with the listeners
and
try and work out in that vein who should present and interview the Brownlow medalist this year. And we were really interrupted by the Ryan Crowley story, but we didn't get to the bottom of that. But there was a lot of people having some fun with that, too. And even the great hot dogs from Big Brother got a mention. And people were listening going, who the hell is hot dogs? That's exactly the point. That is exactly the point.
Yes, it is. But it does add character when you throw someone in who's got a level of fame and obviously a level of accomplishment. So they're going to be comfortable with a microphone or comfortable on camera or whatever. Yeah. I mean,
from that point of view, there's no issue with Arnie.
No issue.
He's very comfortable.
Yeah, I don't think Arnie would want to stand too close to the fireplace, though, I'm tipping, because he could get a bit sort of, you know, remember that scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark when they tied that guy to the post and all the ghouls and ghosts were going around and the face just sort of
starts to melt a bit? You're suggesting there's perhaps been some work?
Oh, I'm suggesting.
Perhaps been some work on Arnie?
I would have thought so.
The Terminator wouldn't get work, would he?
Well, he doesn't need
he's
work.
Steel
he's
underneath.
He's made of metal. He
he's
don't
steel,
know.
He can't melt.
He don't need work. He don't need work at all.
Just suck back together again in one piece.
That was good series. Terminator was a good series. You got to say,
Terminator was terrific.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when Little Metal Man came and he could walk through walls and everything else like that.
George in East Bentley is saying, that's an awesome Arnie accent, Koza. I'm in stitches, which isn't good as I'm in a public place that people turn in to look at me.
At the end of it, of course, he turned to Lewis and you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. And Lewis knew it was coming as well. He goes, oh, okay, let's say it together. So Lewis just screams out, I'll be back. He does it. I can't do it as well as old Arnie.
Ah, very good, very good. So, big weekend at the Australian Formula One Grand Prix, not the MotoGP.
The 2015 Formula One Rolex Australian Grand Prix.
You got to get it in the right order.
You do.
It used to be the Rolex 2015 that was the Qantas, Qantas back in the old days first.
2015 Formula One Rolex Australian Grand Prix. I said it a couple of hundred times.
Got to get it in order. It's very confusing. A very long title.
Well, they pay a lot of money.
Could be the longest title in sport.
Sell a lot of watches. Don't know.
But for a title. It's only got that one little sponsor word.
Yep, it has.
It's a long title.
Yeah, we're into lap three by the time we've announced. We're underway in the...
Did they have the celebrity race?
No.
Why not?
Celebrity race. No celebrity race. So,
why not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, is it a... Well, surely we've got enough celebrities. Surely there's enough people queuing to... I mean, I'd drive around.
You'd
drive
you
around.
Involved.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure
absolutely.
I'd be invited, but you yes, would be. You're, would. A big, you're big news.
Yeah, well, I could see you just nancying along with your little hat and the, you know, the back dashboard
mate,
sort of thing.
It is game on, Donkey
Kongster. Turn it up.
No, I'm on two wheels around corners. Yeah. I'm flipping and landing back on the floor and going again. Mate, it is on.
Dream.
It is on, mate.
You would be safety Sam
no
trundling
way,
around.
Mate.
Be right in the middle of the road. You wouldn't worry about the apex. Pit stop, no, I'm okay, thanks.
I
just clean the windscreen.
I wouldn't need to, mate, because I'd be there by myself that far in front. I could just slow down.
No, celebrity race. But plenty of good underclasses. The V8s were good, and obviously Ford for the first time dominated. For the first time since 2013, they actually scored a pole position. There was no competition points, but they were obviously trying a few different things.
Why isn't there a championship round of the V8
Supercars? It's been sort of in and out around the place, but they'll work
sure,
it
the,
out.
The more the better for the V8 Supercars.
Yes, yeah. And so Ford were really good there. And then, of course, the rolling start, which the V8s do at Albert Park and some other places as well. If they don't all get the start going together when they come around for the rolling start, if the front cars don't go, the back cars get a bit antsy. And that's what we saw in the third or the fourth race. And poor old Marcus Ambrose ended up with his bonnet up around his knees.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
No, you don't go very fast in those sort of cars. A bit of wind resistance. So, but it was good. No, the V8s were fantastic. Very, very good.
Right. So tell me about Joey Montagna from the Saints. What's he been up to, my man Joe?
Joey Montagna today, little story emerging about Joey. And we must say congratulations to Joey. That's another thing I want to talk to you about. The AFLPA, obviously, Chris Dawes and Joey Montagna have got on board. So they're part
on the,
of the
executive.
The executive now, which is great. And I'll talk to you about that a little later. But Joey Montagna had an incident a while back where he'd been moving some trees around in the backyard.
Right.
And what he'd been doing, obviously, was rustling the foliage and everything else like that. Anyway, oh, shock horror. Decides, hang on, I'm looking through there. Think I can see a couple of spots. Not really sure about it. Looks like a snake. So
right.
He thinks, okay, I'm just going to walk back, step back. Won't unsettle it, won't throw rocks at it, won't do anything like that. Sunday afternoon, rings the snake handler. I've tried to ring the council. Anyway, council, no one there on a Sunday. Rings the snake handler. Yep, okay, that'll be 180 clams. I'll come around and sort it out for you. So Joey has to then wait for the snake handler to get around. Snake handler comes around, rustles the foliage back and puts the big stick in and pulls out a woman's snakeskin sandal. Still charges the 180.
Still charges the 180
and says, thanks very much, Joey. That will be 180 for that particular call. So Joey, a little bit embarrassed about that, obviously. But the other thing that I think added a level of complexity to the argument was that it wasn't his wife's snakeskin sandal.
Oh.
So, yeah, now look, yeah, yet to be confirmed, and I'm not casting any aspersions at all on Joey Montana.
Yeah, not at all.
Because there's lots of people at big parties, lots of all that sort of stuff.
Stuff thrown over the fence.
Who knows? That's my understanding of it anyway.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do, though, because I'm sure that there's been plenty of your listeners have, who have had maybe just a close little run-in. And we can disguise voices, we can change names, we can do what you want. But it's like that joke. It's like that joke of the two boys at the pub, right? Two guys at the pub haven't seen each other for a month or so. Anyway, so they're at the pub, they're at the front bar having a couple off the pine. Very, very nice Friday afternoon sort of business. Anyway, one of them drops wallet on the ground, bends over to pick it up. A little bit of builder's crack appears.
Ooh,
but in the middle of builder's crack
is
diamond-studded G-string. So mate number one says to mate number two, hang on a moment, we haven't caught up for each other for a month or so. You just bent over, you got the diamond-encrusted G-string. He goes, how long have you been wearing one of those? And he says, since my wife found one in the glove box of my car.
Right. Right, yes. That is why you would wear it. That's the only reason, surely.
So I want to know the good excuses and the times that you have just sailed very close to the wind and managed to just escape momentarily without having to explain too much, because I reckon there would be a heap of them out there. There would be loads. I want to know the good excuses.
Ian Cohen is with us as our Hump Day hero, and I've got a suggestion or an inkling, Koza, that your little topic that you raised
has scared you off. I am very disappointed, because there will be plenty of men and probably plenty of women as well just driving along right now, maybe on the way to pick up the kids,
all that sort of stuff.
And they're thinking, hang on, I did get away with that one, but I don't want to go to air and actually put it to
scared.
Air. Yeah, it'll be scared.
Petrified.
Absolutely.
They're gone.
Joe Montagna's the man that is doing it at the moment.
It's not his, not anyone her shoe. It's just a random shoe from over the fence. Mm.
Could well be.
Oh, the house that were previous snakes. Owners.
180 clams. Get the snake out.
Previous owners.
It wasn't actually
it thought
snake.
It was a snake. It ended up being a shoe. The photo, by the way, is on the Herald Sun website. It's actually quite amusing. It looks more like a leopard.
Than a snake. I'm tipping if you're in Melbourne, though, and you ring up and say, listen, I think I've got a leopard in my backyard.
But I haven't seen too many leopard-looking snakes.
You go to the bouncing room then for a little while, I would suggest. Haven't seen any what? Too many leopard-looking snakes.
Leopard-looking
snakes. Spots.
Not quite like this.
Yeah, they have.
I can imagine more how it would be if you're a city boy like he is, and he's admitted to that.
He did say I'm a city boy.
I'm very much a city boy. that would just put the... with the wind up your touch.
Yes.
But it looks more like a leopard than a snake.
Okay, so he's going to ring the council and say, I've got a leopard in my
backyard.
I mean, take your pick. What's he going to do? I think I've got a leopard in my backyard.
Well,
I'm totally sure about
if
it.
If he's accurate, if he's fair dinkum about it, if he's really serious about what it looks like, then I'm suggesting that a leopard is much better than a snake.
Okay. He is new to the AFLPA.
Yes.
Along with Chris Dawes.
Yes.
What do the AFLPA need to do, Daniel Harford? What is their number one thing that they should be doing?
Oh, they should be looking after the welfare of the players.
Yeah, I know. Is there something they should be putting on the agenda? I'd be interested to know. People want to give us a call. What should the players be doing now?
Oh, right. You're looking more specific, drilling down sort of stuff.
What's
the biggest issue for the players?
What is it? I mean, look, and let's not get 500 calls on Essendon, because Essendon aside.
I reckon the biggest issue is in footy.
Yeah, what do you think?
Balance, work-life balance.
So not go to as many meetings?
So things outside. No. And to their credit, they have really attacked this in the last decade or so, is having the things outside of footy to take your mind off the world of footy, which is so consuming, because you and I talk about it all day, every day. The fans want to talk about it all day, every day. The spotlight and the scrutiny is such... it's so intense now that it's hard to get away from it. So having other pursuits outside of footy, I think, is critical for the modern-day player.
Okay.
Because they want you to be there professional wages. They want you to be there all day, every day. I'm not 100% sure that's a great idea, full stop, for sport across the globe, let alone Australian rules football. I think work-life balance is critical for the health of these, for the mental health of these young men.
But it's an unusual existence because
absolutely it is.
To go in and be in so much of the public focus week in, week out, but your day is very unusual in that you might have a couple of meetings and you've got a very physical session. But is there still 8 hours per day? I mean, because Bob and Betty Stringbag that pop off to work. And Bob and Betty Stringbag. They head off to work and they have their 8 hours and they know that there's morning tea then and lunch then and might have an afternoon, you know, maybe a little gasper outside or something like that to break the afternoon. I don't know. But Bob and Betty head off and they know they're going to do
the
8 hours.
Don't care about Bob and Betty.
Okay. So that makes the difference. But does that make the difference in the 8 hours? Surely the 8 hours.
What's the 8 hours bit?
Well, I'm saying, do footballers have to adhere to the 8 hours, or is it okay just to go and train for 2 hours and that's your day?
Well,
you're talking about the work-life balance.
Currently, they're there from I was talking to suppliers in February, and they're there from 8 a.m. till 5 o'clock at night.
Okay, so they're doing the 8 hours or 9 hours or whatever it is that Bob and Betty do.
Yeah.
Okay, but then they've got their weekends where they're working. They're working on the Saturday, Sunday, Friday night, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So where do you fit in the work-life balance? Because to do anything above and beyond than what you're being asked to do, you're almost going to like the old-fashioned night school, or you're doing something outside of those hours.
Yeah. Well, now that's not every day, but a lot of days of the week when they're big days at the footy club, they're there for those long hours. I'm just saying because it's so consuming, the world of AFL footy, getting your mind outside of that world I think is really important. Now, how that happens, what mechanics you use to make that happen is up to you.
But is that playing golf 3 times a week and getting on that app where you can all compare scores and there's 300 footballers on the app that all do that? Is that work-life balance, or is it going and studying at the stockbroking agency that you want to work in post-football?
I think mental stimulation outside, a course or a job or whatever it might be, for the time that you have available, I think that is a very, very good thing to do.
So almost as the number one thing that players...
And it's something I wish I had taken more control of when I was playing.
So what did you do with your time when you weren't in meetings, when you weren't doing that?
Well, I started off doing a uni course.
Yeah.
And then I got to the point where I was that focused on my career that I just shut everything else out. I just wanted to be solely focused on my footy. And there was a lot of downtime back then, much more downtime than there is now for these guys. And I just would do stuff, just stuff. They didn't make the best use of my time.
Is that PlayStation? Is it?
Well, that's a component of it. You can't play golf.
Although when you were playing, it was Atari probably or something like that, wasn't it?
That was a
Commodore 64.
It was just Pong. But it's the best use of the time. I think they're much better these days at making the best use of their time, utilising their time. But just having things outside the fishbowl is, I think, is critical for the players today.
Hey, Half, I don't care about the players. Care about my club, not the players' feelings. So privileged life, part-time job average, $400,000 a year. Try working 50, 60 hours a week with no holidays, being asked to reduce your price. Can't believe I'm hearing this. Brett and Backus Marsh.
No one cares about Brett's job, though. You pay a price for this. I unbelievably understand what Brett's saying about the wage and all that sort of stuff. Everyone knows AFL players, in fact, professional sports people, on the whole, there's some that still get screwed, on the whole, earn a really good living out of a wonderful career opportunity. But no one, with respect, this all is, by the way. Just work with me in the realm we're working with today.
But you're saying no one turns up to watch Brett.
No one cares what Brett's doing.
Ply his trade.
No, there's no one writing articles about that in the paper or abusing them on Twitter or getting into them on the radios and TV. There's a price that comes with that. The focus on this industry, particularly, is more intense than I would say, outside of politicians, perhaps. Probably second to politicians, but government running the country.
Yeah, but in terms of care factor, there's not a lot of pubs I know where people walk in and they go, oh, how about that Bill Shorten? You know, I tell you what, he and Tony Abbott need to be doing this and this, but people will walk into a pub and say, oh, can you believe so-and-so transferred this club to that club? Can't you believe what Gary Jr.'s doing? All that sort of thing.
Do you subscribe to my theory?
The mental stimulation outside of it. Mm. Well, I'm asking you, what do you think the number one thing that the Players Association need to be doing? And you're saying it's mental.
But I just told you.
They need to have stimulation.
They need to be getting things sort of outside of the world of AFL footy.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. Do you have a nomination?
No. I'm saying that do they need, because I think player welfare is really important. No doubt it's very important, but I think they've actually got it pretty right. I reckon in terms of player welfare now, the players are looked after to such an extent and to such an extent that some of them, when they come out of the footy factory, actually don't know how to pay a gas bill,
that's different.
How to do all that sort of thing. So sometimes they're wrapped up in so much cotton wool that they come out and they go, what do you mean I've got to register my car? Because when I went into a club, I was 17. Then I had the manager or the club or someone else looking after it for me, or a car sponsorship or whatever. Yeah, they come out at 32 that's and they've had 15 years of not actually buying into the real life.
That's right. That is different. Yeah, that's not life skills. That's just being pampered.
That's right. Because I think the Players Association have to also be aware that they've got to arm their people to come out and say, all right, if you play till you're 28, chances are you're going to be on the planet for another 50 years. You've still got to be prepared for those 50 years. So
absolutely.
I think for mine, the Players Association has to not only provide mental stimulation, but they've also got to provide a few life skills and a few reality checks every now and again to say, hang on a moment, the life you're living, and we all know that is closely scrutinised, but it's not the life that you will live post-football, and it's not the life that 98.5% of everyone else, Bob and Betty, live on the other side as well. So I think the Players Association have to have a little reality check as well every now and again.
Does that fall on the Players Association's shoulders?
Of course it does, because they're the ones helping mould what the players are going to be post-match. All the study campaigns and all those things go through the Players Association.
That's that mental stimulation I'm talking about.
Level of responsibility has to be, hang on, guys, like, this is what we're doing too.
Absolutely,
Players Association. The same way they also look after some of the medicals from players that have gone past, or all those sort of things. That comes out of the Players Association.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd suggest that there's a few more categories of people that should be worried about that as well as the Players Association.
No, players have to take their own responsibility.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, who else does it fall to? The clubs, supporters.
Geez, you've got a high voice.
What's it
got to do with the clubs and supporters?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's to do with the players. They've got to look after themselves.
I think we're going around in circles here. We're actually saying the same thing.
No, we are not.
I think we might be.
No, we are not.
I don't know where you think you're reading what I'm saying.
No, you're taking it from the players' side to say that it's other people's responsibility. I think it falls in other people's courts. We'll rewind that tape.
I'll tell you what we'll do.
We're going to
need to talk to Dave Smith after this on professional athletes and the choices that they make.
Yeah, correct.
After the break. We'll talk about Chris Borland after the break. Yeah. And then we'll just refocus what you think is being said here and we'll just shape it to actually what is being said. We'll do that after this. Kozer is with us and Dave Smith, the sports guy, NBC Sports Radio host, is on the line. G'day, Dave.
Evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
We are very well. Great to talk to you. I wanted to find out more about this Chris Borland situation. For those that don't know, linebacker for the Niners, who has quit after his rookie year because he's concerned about the ramifications, long-term effects of concussion. Tell me more.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm a 49ers fan, so this was, I'm concerned about his health and well-being. I'm also concerned that he was a tremendous player that isn't going to be playing next year. That's three players under 27 years old who retired in the offseason in the NFL. But Chris Borland was kind of an unknown coming out of the University of Wisconsin. He was a fourth-round draft choice. Didn't play much last year until Patrick Willis, the all-pro linebacker, went out with a toe injury. They brought this kid in, and he was just fantastic. He was the best player they had on defense last year. Came out of nowhere, and everybody was looking forward to a bright future, and he was looking at a lot of money in a year or two with a new contract. So he surprised everybody by saying that he'd had enough. He had shoulder surgery on both shoulders when he was in college, the right and the left, when he played at Wisconsin. He had a couple of concussions in college. He had another concussion last year, and in the off season, he said his body just felt beat up, and he was worried about all the new studies on concussions. And he went to experts and brain doctors and the people who specialize in this kind of thing. And then he saw, a lot of the older NFL players have been committing suicide in the last couple of years and having mental issues post career. And he said, I don't want that to happen to me. I've given it a lot of thought, and I'm just going to retire. And I don't want to, be arthritic and have a brain issues the rest of my life. So that was a really surprising story.
Dave, is there any chance he could have changed the way he played the game or done something a little different to try and protect the head? Or, I mean, is that just simply not possible? And at the age of 24, you say, well, that's it, I've had enough.
Well, now certainly he can, because the rules in the NFL have changed so much now. They pretty much eliminated using your head as a spear and tackling with your face or your head. And you have to use the shoulder now or they throw the penalty flag, and concussions were down 25% last year. So they're making progress here, but still, I guess he'd been having some headaches in his shoulder for killing him, and his body was hurting him. But I would imagine, guys, at 24 years old, you know, and he's looking at maybe a $50 or $60 million guaranteed contract in a year or two when his rookie deal is up. I wouldn't be surprised if in a month or two he has a change of heart and feels a little bit better and starts working out and his body heals up a little bit. Well, I just can't imagine this is going to be permanent with a young guy like that. And he could set up himself, his kids, and his grandkids forever with the next contract he gets.
The issue of concussion, as you said, is a very, very strong debate going on in NFL football at the moment. I read somewhere earlier today that the average age of death of an NFL player is 55. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true, you know, because you look back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was a free-for-all out there. It was like a street fight. It was very, very, very little adherence to the rules. And back then, you were considered a sissy. You know, if you had a concussion or a broken bone, they just throw you back out in the field and say, keep playing, which made it a lot worse. And this is why, about 3 or 4 years ago, a huge group of retired football players filed a class action lawsuit against the NFL because of all the long-term health effects they were having. And then it was proven that team doctors wouldn't tell them when they had concussions, wouldn't tell them how serious it was. They hid information and withheld information on long-term brain issues. And, you know, back when I was playing, I played high school football, you know, back in the day, and they just called it getting your bell wrong.
Yeah.
You'd make a tackle, you'd get knocked out, but said, hey, you just got your bell wrong. They put some smelling salts under your nose and shove you back onto the field. That's the way it used to be, but now it's different, and I think the class action lawsuit scared the heck out of the NFL, and I think the owners were worried about a multi-billion-dollar settlement, so all of a sudden they started making all kinds of rule changes, and they were worried about concussions. But it's funny, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, didn't seem to care at all about concussions or injuries until that class action lawsuit happened. Then I think the owners called him up and said, hey, we got to do something. We got to pretend like we're really concerned about all these injured players so we don't get hit with a major lawsuit.
Mm. Well, it's a fascinating story, and I'm keen to find out more as it unfolds, and we look forward to checking in with you to learn more about it through the journey. Dave, thanks for your time, pal.
Oh, anytime. Thanks, guys.
And Dave Smith, sports guy and NBC Sports Radio host. Coz has been with us on screen. Great to have him with us this afternoon on Halftime. That Chris Boland story, it's intriguing, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Clearly an intelligent young man. He's got his degree from the University of Wisconsin and said that, you know what? I don't think I need this.
Yeah, but I tell you what,
I'm prepared to roll that dice.
The way we're talking about it, $50 to $60 million worth of football playing career, turn your back on that. That is a brave, brave, brave move.
Yeah.
Just in financial terms. I mean, I know
ridiculous.
Everyone says your health's paramount, and that is absolutely true. But you're talking about percentages here. You're talking about, okay, do I roll a dice, play for 3 years, hope that I get out of it unscathed, or do I actually just call a dead set halt to it right now and not even progress down that path of potentially making more money than me or any of my friends will ever see in a lifetime? You know, I mean, these are the decisions he's making.
Yeah.
To say, do I do that or do I actually go, no, I don't want to be rolling around? And the other thing, of course, is when they get out, that's the difference.
Well, and that's the point I was trying to make before, and it's so beautifully put by an SMS before, is there a line, just talking about the NFL stuff, and the average age being 55.
55.
The death of the NFL
staggering
players, which is...
You're already older than that.
That's bizarre when you think about it. Is there a line of thought the NFL players are committing suicide, maybe not because of the concussions, but they have a massive feeling of letdown and uncertainty about their lives post-playing career, despite the money.
Yeah, out of the institution. It's the old Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank.
Out of the institution, all of a sudden, this is all I've ever known, Now I feel really uncomfortable. Haven't got the cabbage, but not much else.
That was my point before when you and I were tateeing.
Yeah, really.
That was my point, that there's got to be more these blokes whilst they're there. So when it's over, be it 2 years, 4 years, 8 years, 12 years, 140 years.
Learn how to pay a bill.
You can just move into the transition as smoothly as possible.
Channel has to be there, but the players have to embrace that as well.
Take responsibility for your own life.
Absolutely. That's what I was saying.
Well, so what we were doing was saying the same stuff.
No, that's what
I said, but differently.
You've come around to my side.
You're a knob. The Proteas have done some more damage. More on that with Smike at 4 o'clock. Kozo, what's on for the rest of the day, mate?
Yeah, word off the SMS too is there's more to the 49ers story. Tonight, hosting a forum for Tennis Victoria, which is one of the great initiatives of Tennis Victoria, bouncing around a few ideas from different clubs as to, hey, this worked for
us. All the clubs come together.
Yeah, correct.
Workshopping.
Correct. Workshop.
Spitballing.
Yep. So well done, Tennis Victoria, doing that tonight. So looking forward to it.
Well, well done to you for being a part of the Hump Day Hero action this afternoon.
It's marvellous to come in here and look at your smiling countenance, Daniel.
Well, that's a lie, and we all know that. That Correct. Is an absolute lie, but we
it's
do
like
appreciate
a mile
you
of hard
in.
Road.
Ian Cohen, our Hump Day Hero this afternoon. Always nice to chat with Kozo.